tell you why.
Tell you why.
I'm the snappiest dresser right down to my inch wide tie.
To my inch wide tie.
And to get you wise, I'll explain to you. Few are the things that a face is supposed to do. I wear a suit, suit jacket with side bands 5 inches long.
5 inches long.
I have two-tone broke all the rest, yeah, you know this is wrong.
Know this is wrong.
But the main thing is, unless you're a fool, ah, you know you gotta know, yeah, you gotta be.
That's Zoot Zoot from The High Numbers, also known as The Who. It was their first single from 1964, and it featured on the soundtrack released to the movie Quadrophenia, which is why I'm playing it today, as the film Quadrophenia came out today on the 14th of September in 1979. It was based on The Who's 1973 rock opera, and it featured the likes of Toya Wilcox, Ray Winstone and Sting. And it was about the mods versus the rockers. Chris, you'd be a bit of a snappy dresser. You got an inch wide tie?
No. Funnily enough, I went through my wardrobe a few weeks ago and tossed out a lot of those sorts of ties. So, no, I regret to tell you, I'm fully up to date and the wide ties are gone. But at least I do have ties. I do have ties. If there's anything I would hate to be, it's run a factory making ties these days, because the other day, before lockdown, I had to go to the PwC Centre in Commercial Bay to visit Chapman Tripp, I think it was. And I was the only person from the foyer to level 36 where Chapman Tripp resides who was wearing a tie. So the times, they are changing.
And what kind of tie was it? What colour?
It was a very boring red and black tie. Lana would love it because it looked like a Canterbury tie.
Lana, have you seen Quadrophenia?
No, I haven't, but you know who goes on about that is my workmate Gary McCormick.
Oh, I bet he does. Would he be a mod or a rocker? He'd be a rocker, obviously. He'd never be a mod.
He'd be whatever you want him to be, Karen. He'd be a rocker, though, I think.
Well, there was definite style, leather jackets, Levi's, brothel creepers. Gary. Wouldn't they? It's 26 minutes to 5 on the panel with Lana Searle and Chris Finlayson. And we're going to talk now about this couple who travelled to a Wanaka holiday home from Auckland in Alert Level 4, and they've been granted interim name suppression. But the lawyer representing the couple has told a court that social media users cannot be trusted to follow name suppression orders, and the couple have not been charged yet. To talk more about this, we're joined by Dr. Cathy Strong, a senior lecturer at Massey University's School of Journalism and Public Relations. Kia ora, Dr. Strong.
Kia ora, kia te mihi koe.
Can you please explain why this couple have name suppression?
Because they were able to hire a lawyer to go and apply for it, and which is anybody's right. And obviously it's legal, so they've applied for it to that their name be kept private until they're charged.
Is it common to get it?
It's not common to apply before they're even charged. No, that's not common. And when I say common, let me make this quite clear, is that we're talking about New Zealand. New Zealand uses this suppression laws way more liberally than most other Western countries. A lot more liberally that they keep people's names private, even after they've been convicted.
Why do we do that?
Well, it stemmed from a very long time ago, and it's just gotten changed and changed. I mean, at the beginning, it was really for very young first offenders so that they could get their life back on track and become good people by the time they got to be adults. But it's just been used a lot more and a lot more. The idea is that, first of all, they may not get a fair trial because everybody will be in the media trying them beforehand. Other countries don't worry about that so much. And the other thing is that, like in this case, they're saying that they may be vilified, you know, in publicly if people find out about their names.
So what charges would they be facing if they do get charged?
Well, that's a really interesting one, and I'm not a lawyer, but it looks like they could. It's under the new COVID Act, And so there is a thing called an offense. If they're charged with that, they could get 6 months in jail. Or an infringement, which is a fine of $1,000.
Chris, have you looked into this? What they could get
charged with? I think we all have to be very careful when talking about the particular case, because it is before the court, and I read Judge Bruce David's interim judgment. So let's deal with the principle rather than this case. And I think the comment made by the professor is a particularly good one. The test is whether or not a person can get a fair trial and has to be judged against that standard. The test does not include whether or not there could be a whole lot of stuff put on Facebook or Twitter about people. So I think there is a case to be made for suppression orders to be revisited, because I do think the professor is right, and there's a tendency for over-liberal use in New Zealand. Now, that's the general principle. I'd prefer not to say anything more about a case that is before the High Court.
But is it before the High Court when it's just name suppression and they haven't been charged?
Well, I think it is going to the High Court, because Judge Bruce Davidson made an interim decision, which I think expires at 7 o'clock tonight, within which time the lawyer acting for these people will need to have applied to the High Court, because as the district court judge said, a district court judge can make orders given the statutory powers that the judge has, but the district court does not have an inherent jurisdiction like the High Court has, and so these people will need to go to the High Court if they want an extension. So the judge's decision with respect looked to me to be very sensible, but it's still before the court and has yet to be determined. So it's probably a question of the less said, the best said. And you know, in my I've been thinking section, I talked about the great interest that there is in this matter, and that is there one law for all? Well, the answer is there has to be, and we'll see how it plays out in this particular case.
Kathy, and you mentioned social media, and just one look at social media and you can see who it is.
Yes, I know. And this is what, as I was thinking about what I was going to say when I came on, I had to be very, very careful, because we're on mainstream media. And there's a whole lot of things that I might say that would be breaking the suppression order. So, I mean, Chris is absolutely right. We have to be very, very careful about talking about this particular case. But you get on the social media, and it seems like everybody knows their name, their address, who their parents are, you know, where they live. They seem to know everything, and which is why I think, I call the suppression orders rather quaint, you know, because they've outlived their usefulness. Social media gets information around so quickly and is hard to regulate. So the only ones who are really losing out is the robust mainstream media, which is where we usually go to get truth and accuracy, and we can't.
Kathy, thank you.
And that's exactly what happened some years ago when Cardinal Pell was charged. He had a suppression order in Victoria, and yet in other parts of the world, the allegations were aired in the mainstream media. And, of course, it also applied to the person who obtained a suppression order, the guy who murdered that English tourist, and yet the name was published in English papers. So, look, the point that is very well made, that this whole area needs to be revisited.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Okay, good.
That's Dr. Kathy Strong, Senior Lecturer at Massey University's School of Journalism and Public Relations. And Lana, I heard the mother of a 21-year-old who shares the same name, supposedly, as the woman who some people on social media are outing as one half of the couple. And she says that her daughter's just getting this flood of hate because people think it's her. So, and what's worse, her daughter fits the profile of who these, they are vigilantes, believe was the culprit. So that's pretty bad.
Well, look, I hate using the cancel culture term, but this is an example of that when you really know nothing, but you've got a keyboard and you can do your form of an investigation. And I wonder what you think, Chris, too, about, I know over in Australia, companies are now having to be more careful about people who comment on their posts on social media and how you can, you know, you're now basically, you can be held responsible for what people say. Do you think that'll be the same for here in New Zealand anytime soon?
Oh, I think it applies now. If you go to a blog site like Kiwi Blog, David Farrer will say, I can moderate this conversation. And when you see some of the filth that people post, it really is ghastly stuff. But I remember John Key saying to us in Cabinet one day, don't read social media.
Absolutely.
Because you'll be appalled. You're appalled by what they say about you. But you have to develop the hide of a rhinoceros when you're in Parliament.
Did you read it anyway?
Actually, funnily enough, I had an interesting interchange with Winston Peters once in Parliament, and I just came across a blog site that had commented on it, and the nastiness there about, well, Winston, it was utterly justified, me, an innocent and lovely fellow, but the nastiness about me was incredible. And normally the people who post the stuff are sort of pimply-faced losers who live in dark little rooms.
Yes.
And if you pass them in the street, they wouldn't say boo. So just don't read it.
Just getting back to this couple, just a final word on this. Should they front up and apologise and be done with it, mea culpa, or have we just passed the point of forgiveness?
Oh, gosh, it's a hard one, isn't it? Because it's like, do you front foot it and do that? But it's not a front foot situation anymore. There's been the vacuum of silence. I think it's too late.
Chris?
Yeah, tend to agree. I think let's just see how this one plays out without too much more comment.
16 minutes to 5 on the panel, and meat accounts for nearly 60% of all greenhouse gases from food production. That's according to an international study which was published in the journal Nature Food. Greenhouse gas emissions from animal-based foods are twice that of plant-based foods, although I'll add to that rice growing also adds to methane emissions. Well, joining us now is the Chief Executive of Beef and Lamb New Zealand, Sam McGyver. His organisation is responsible for the domestic promotion of beef and lamb, and it's funded by New Zealand retailers and processors. Kia ora, Sam.
Kia ora. Just a correction on that. We're responsible too for international trade, market development internationally, and other aspects like that. So we have a sister organisation that you're pointing to there.
Thank you. I'm sure you're familiar with studies like this one. When you see stats like this, do you tend to just brush them off, or are they alarming to you?
Never brush them off, to be honest. All of this analysis is pretty important when we're facing the issues that we are in terms of global warming. So for us, we look at it and we put it in a New Zealand context. And I guess the New Zealand context is very, very different from what's been analysed here. You'll see the report, I mean, it mainly focuses on industrial farming practices, crops being raised to feed livestock. And I guess the reality in New Zealand is just so different from that. So, 99% of our beef and lamb is free range, grass-fed, not feedlot. And a second thing is that we're unique in New Zealand in that the majority of our sheep and beef is farmed on hill country. So it's land that cannot be cropped. And therefore, utilising the pasture for animal production is a very efficient use of that land. And probably a third thing is that if we actually look at our carbon footprint compared to global figures, we tend to sit at less than half of those global figures because of our efficiency in our farming system.
Well, have you seen any New Zealand specific figures on greenhouse gas emissions from meat?
Yes, we have actually, and we're just in the final stages of updating what we call as our life cycle, because I guess the key thing, and this study has done that too, right, is from sort of cradle to the grave, really, in terms of looking at the full footprint. And our figure, in terms of those figures that were talked about in that report, ours would be less than half of that figure globally.
Well, the government, they've got a goal of reducing New Zealand's emissions to 50% of 1990 levels, 50% of 1990 levels by 2050. Is that achievable?
Listen, we as an industry have set ourselves our own goal of being carbon neutral by 2050. If you look at what we've achieved since 1990, we've reduced our emissions by our greenhouse gas emissions by 30% since 1990. No other sector in New Zealand has come anywhere near close to that. But also, listen, we do recognise the importance in making our contribution. We started investing in greenhouse gas research back in 2003. And just for example, one of the recent findings is that we've found that there's sheep between the highest emitting sheep and lowest emitting sheep in terms of methane emissions, there's 10%. And so now farmers have the opportunity to put that across their flocks. So none of this stuff is actually easy. It requires a lot of investment, but we're putting our best foot forward as an industry to play our part.
So can I just ask you, how do you measure what those emissions are?
Yeah, so listen, there are a number of factors that the government has put together, emissions factors that they're called, which is what goes into the national inventory. But listen, we have some special scientific equipment that can capture the amount of methane that a sheep or cattle beast is emitting. So we have a special little lab, I guess, that can capture that, and that's indicative of what the species will be emitting. And that's what's used in those default figures for the industry.
So how are you future-proofing your business model? You know, how are you doing it? Well, do you think you're on track? It's okay. We're good as we are.
Oh, listen, no, we are world leaders in this, and we're not resting on our laurels, which is why a large amount of investment in terms of research, we would leave the world in ruminant research. The other thing that we're looking at is just really our holistic farming systems. So one of the unique things about sheep and beef farming in New Zealand is that we have 1.4 million hectares of native bush that is conserved and that is sequestering carbon. And so for us, as we look at our whole farming system and use of our land, you know, we take that into the whole context of our I guess impact on the environment, impact on climate change, and playing our part as responsible citizens in addressing our issues.
Well, Sam, thank you for joining the panel today.
Thank you. Pleasure.
That's Sam MacGyver, Chief Executive of Beef and Lamb New Zealand. And Chris, do you buy what Sam's saying, that they have holistic farming systems?
Yes, I do. I think Sam's presentation was very, very good. And I think it's time that we actually went into bat for our farmers, because I do think we have the most efficient model in the world. And what he says about where we graze and how we graze is absolutely correct. And I'm sure these are issues that James Shaw will want to take on board before he goes off on his little carbon neutral jaunt to Glasgow, where 1,800 people a day are getting COVID, and then comes back to tell us what changes need to be made.
Well, I have to ask you, do you think he shouldn't be going?
No, he should not be going. It's a jaunt. It's for the 26th meeting of the Paris round, or whatever they call it. And I think the whole thing's a joke.
What about the businesses going to the expo in Dubai? Should they be going there, and the entertainers, and showing off New Zealand's cultural and business models?
Is that definitely going ahead?
I think so, pretty much. Yep.
I've got a friend. I actually have a friend who's there on that trip at the moment, and he looks like he's having a heck of a good time.
Yeah, well, I don't mind people going offshore to sell New Zealand products, but I can't see any justification for James Shaw laying down the law about when Parliament should be meeting under what levels and then going off to Glasgow on a 14-day jaunt.
Lana, going back to the meat subject, do subjects like this make you want to cut down on meat? Do you eat meat in the first place?
It's funny you said that this morning. I just find you have to be careful here because you can't really win. You mentioned rice earlier, and then I know you go into looking further into plant-based products, and that then too isn't great. I get stuck in a cyclone of worry about everything if I go too deep into the subject. And I'm just a basic girl who grew up in Dargaville, where we lived off, you know, silver fern farms, and we ate meat all the time. So I'm consciously trying to make a difference, but I don't know for how long other options are going to be any better.
Thanks, yeah, I tried. I call myself a pescatarian these days because yes. I love white. But every once in a while, I have a little bit of lamb or beef. And a few weeks ago, I was at a dinner where James Cameron was speaking, and it was a beautiful dinner. It was a vegan dinner, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I had no energy the next day because it just lacked protein.
Yeah, it may not have been the meal. I'm sure it had protein in it.
The meal was fantastic, but when I went to the gym the next day to do whatever weights I was doing, I felt completely underwhelmed and tired. And so you do need protein, and there is no doubt about it. Meat is a major source of protein.
Well, vegans respond, 2101, and vegetarians. 7 minutes to five, and it's official. Binge-watching television shrinks your brain. That's according to a study conducted in the United States. People who spent more than 2 hours a day in front of TV had less of the old grey matter when they reached middle age. Every extra hour of average daily TV time between the ages of 30 and 50 was linked to a 0.5% reduction in brain volume. Not every day, but when you reached 50. And the lead author of the study, Dr. Ryan Doherty of the John Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, says excessive viewing could be targeted and reduced for middle-aged persons because the middle-aged are sensitive to the neurobiology of dementia and brain atrophy. He says activities like board games and reading are better for the brain because they are, here's a long sentence, cognitively stimulating sedentary activities. Do you watch a lot of TV, Lana? You're on TV, of course, but...
Oh, no, do you know, I don't. I've got a very short attention span, Karen, and so when I hear about people binge watching, you know, a whole series in a night or even in a week, I just cannot fathom that. I want to get outside and I want to go and do stuff. I'm too busy. But I can see, you can tell when someone has been watching TV for a long period of time. So I assume that's what they're talking about.
Well, you'll be all right. You've got a few more years to go before you're middle-aged, so you can watch a bit more TV.
A few more years up my sleeve.
Yeah, how can you tell, by the way, when people have been watching too much TV?
They look hungover. They come out of the room and they look a bit dead inside. It's like they've been on a TV bender and they've come back into the world of the living where everyone else is doing things and have jobs, and they realise they've been in a dark room with the curtains shut watching, you know, two seasons of I was going to say Schitt's Creek as an example of a TV show. It's like a teenager, but the person's 30.
Do you watch a lot of TV, Chris?
No, I gave my television set away 25 years ago, and I don't regret it for one moment. And when occasionally I see what's on television, if, for example, I'm visiting a family member, I'm appalled. And if I'm staying in a hotel and I channel surf, all you see is garbage. And so the proposition has to be correct. The more television you watch, the nuttier you become. And in fact, I was, before I received a lineup of what the issues were going to be that we would be discussing this afternoon, I was giving my dear 92-year-old mother a lecture on exactly this question.
Is she a binge watcher?
No, I simply said, you should be reading more, you should be listening to more music, you shouldn't be sitting in front of television watching The Chase.
Oh, your poor mother.
I was going to say, I bet she watches The Chase.
No, it's good for her. I said, you need to do more reading. And so that's simply the way it is. If you want to stay acute as you get older, you can imagine what sort of son I am, you have to read more, and you have to listen to music more, but watching television is not good for your health.
Well, what did she say when you told her that?
She changed the subject.
Oh, very diplomatic. So if you don't watch television, what do you do then?
I obviously listen to Radio New Zealand and the concert program. I listen to a lot of music. I every week try and read The Economist. There's a very good article in there this week about the rise of the liberal left and the cancel culture. And read books, hold books, not read them digitally, but hold a book and read it. And one of the good things about lockdown was being able to do exactly that, reading The Rat Line, East West Street. There's a whole lot of good stuff out there at the moment that people should be reading.
Oh, we're coming up to the news at 5 and Checkpoint. Just want to share some feedback with you. Been a vegan for over 10 years, plenty of healthy protein in a vegan diet, and I have run many half marathons, regular boot camps, swimming, etc. Being vegan is the best way to look after yourselves and the environment. I'm not anti-farmers, just think we need to make a change. And this texter says, Chris, you need to do some research on protein sources.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Unusual.
Today I was reading an article on what is regarded as one of the worst forms of environmental damage, and it's caused by Norwegian salmon farms. And salmon farms are actually dreadful polluters and create methane gas. So, I've got no problem with requiring the standards of land-based farmers to go up, so long as it applies across the board to the salmon farmers of Bulwer and other parts of the Marlborough Sounds and so on, because these standards need to rise.
Chris Finlayson, thank you very much for joining us on the panel this afternoon. Kia ora. And Lana Searle, thank you.
Thank you very much, Karen. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
See you later. Bye.
We're coming up to the news at 5, as I said, and then Checkpoint with Lisa Owen. Thank you very much for joining us on the panel today. Enjoy the rest of your day. Kia pai te tuanga o te rā. I think I said that okay. I'll practice for tomorrow. Good afternoon.